Data publication. You know, at the risk of giving you a talk about the EBI's business, I'm going to try and focus on some of the adventures we've had quite recently on trying to link data to publications in the context of UK PubMed Central. So which publications am I talking about? So in November the 1st, UK PubMed Central will be known as Europe PubMed Central. And the trigger for this is the involvement of the European Research Council as one of the funders of Europe PubMed Central, bringing the total number of funders involved to 19, most of which are in the UK and include the Wellcome Trust, led by the Wellcome Trust, MRC, BBSRC, and so on, but also now three European funders of life science research. And Europe PubMed Central, so I'm going to schizophrenically switch between UK PubMed Central and Europe PubMed Central. I hope you can forgive me on that. But basically, Europe PubMed Central will contain all the full-text articles of UK PubMed Central. That's about 2.2 million, which, of course, we share and get a feed from the PMC in the USA. But also, when I first came to the EBI a few years ago, there was a database there called Site Explorer, which has about 26 million abstracts. So this is PubMed, essentially, and a few other sources, such as patents from the European Patent Office. So also, you can access all of that content with one search at the current UK PMC website and the rebranded Europe PubMed Central in a couple of months. So that's what I'm talking about in terms of the publications. I thought this audience might be quite interested in how we're doing as building a gold open access corpus. And actually, when I say open access, all the way through this talk, I'm talking about gold open access. Free to read, free to reuse. That's very clear. If we take PubMed in the life sciences as 100% of the scientific output of life science researchers worldwide, then we've got about 18% of those articles represented in UK PubMed Central, looking at the publication year 2010. So of all the articles published in 2010, about 18% of them are available as full text in UK PubMed Central. And of those, actually almost half of them are now gold open access, CC BY or CC BY NC. It's a little bit more than previous years, but I think that's just because we haven't quite come to the end of the reporting for 2011. If something's under embargo for 12 months, it might not be in the database yet if it was published last year. So we've still got a ways to go. Things are increasing, but we have a way to go. Okay, so I'm going to sort of talk about three kinds of links between data and publications. I'm looking for something to... Okay, so research articles and big data. So in the life sciences, there's been a long tradition of depositing data in primary sequence databases, for example. And as part of that submission, frequently in the metadata for that data, there's a link to a research article. So really, the sort of first way of integrating research articles with the data is actually from a data perspective, where you're using research articles as context for the data. And there's been a huge amount of help from journals in that in the past, because they've made, if you're talking about a data set, you know, a DNA sequence, for example, then the journal has made it a requirement to cite an accession number for that data. And this has been extended to things like protein structures and gene expression and so on. That's number one. It's from the data perspective. Number two that I'll talk about is, well, how do research articles actually cite data? And I'll talk about that with respect to the data in these big thematic databases, the kind of thing that EBI specialize in. And then finally, I'll briefly touch on unstructured data and its relationship to research articles from the perspective of UK PMC. So first of all, citing the literature from data records, which, you know, really is actually data annotation. In the whole of UK PubMed Central, not just the open access set, we try and reverse the links that have been provided from the data perspective. So in that regard, we've got well over a million papers that have been cited in database records. The winner, if you like, is Uniprot. So if you're not familiar with this, this is a sort of review database that's protein-centric. So a given protein record will have a lot of information in it, both data and reference lists. So this is data that's been added by human beings, curators, not submitters. And there's about 800,000 records in PubMed that have been cited in Uniprot. And the purple bit at the top shows you the percentage of those articles that we've managed to text mine terms from. So you can see that there's still quite a lot of blue where these articles are not available for text mining UK PubMed Central. So this is a valuable way to link data to articles. Nucleotides do quite well, 370,000 PubMed records, and so on and so on. We go right down to the protein-protein interaction database, where there's only about 5,000 records linked. We've indexed these links so that it's a little bit obscure, and we hope to do a little bit better with our interfaces. But basically, if you type in with a certain syntax, if you type in a Uniprot ID, you can get a list of the articles that are associated with that record. A bibliography, if you like, for that protein. Okay, so now the other way around. How do research articles refer to data? Well, I hear the story gets curiouser and curiouser. We do some text mining in UK PMC. We mine the whole corpus, 2.2 plus million articles, for certain types of thing, named entities. And they're listed here. Accession numbers, chemicals, diseases, genes, proteins, GO terms, and organisms, GO's gene ontology. And you'll see there's some quite unique terms is actually the size of the dictionary. So you can see for chemicals, for example, the dictionary size is relatively small, only 77,000 terms. And then the second column is the number of articles it hits. And as you can see, you know, a lot of them are verging on 2 million articles. So actually, most of the content in UK PubMed Central has got some useful terms in it, which is a good thing. And then in terms of the actual number of annotations, you can see we're into many millions of unique instances of any one of those dictionary terms. And in a geeky way, if you're interested in this kind of thing, you can see that the chemicals here have got a very low, very small dictionary of only 77,000 terms, but they hit the 84 million annotations. And this highlights one of the challenges of taking a vocabulary that's not quite in scope for the corpus that you've got. So we've got biomedical or biological articles, and this is a chemical dictionary. So some of the terms in the chemical dictionary, things like chlorine and chloride and RNA and water. So these things aren't terribly useful, but we tag them anyway at this point. The thing I want to focus on here is accession numbers, because these are really data citations. And just a quick look at the landscape of this is that you can see there's quite a large dictionary. There are lots of different accession numbers cited, but they're hitting actually a relatively small number of articles. And the number of annotations is, you know, almost, it's almost a one-to-one relationship, meaning that accession numbers in this data set, you know, tend to get cited once. There are not many accession numbers that get cited more than once. So this is some very recent work. I inherited from one of the research text mining groups two researchers to do some text mining with this summer. So we've just started looking into how these accession numbers are cited. And we've restricted this study to the open access set, which will explain some of the results, I hope, soon. So in UK PubMed Central, all the content we have, well, most of the content we have coming in now is in XML, according to the NLM DTD. This makes it fairly easy to compute across. So this is one advantage of gold open access if it ends up in UK PMC. It's all in the same data format, making it easier to do things like text mining. If we look at the accession numbers that have been annotated, so there is in that tag set, there is a, getting quite technical now, but there is a means for publishers to tag accession numbers. There's a language available to do that. And if you look for those tags in the open access articles in UK PMC, you'll find that there's a number of accession numbers that have been tagged, and you can see on the left here that it's the sequence databases, GenBank, ENA, that dominate. A few PDB ones, a few SwissProt, and then a very small number of other. And these types down the bottom here are the types of types of accession numbers that are part of the vocabulary of the DTD. If we then go and do some text mining, we find that the profile changes somewhat. Of course, the favorite ones are still the DNA sequences or nucleotide sequences, but there are many more PDB and SwissProt, and actually we've extended this recently to gene expression experiments in ArrayExpress, PFAM, which is protein families, and Interpro is also protein families. Of course, this is all percentages. If you want to look at actual numbers, about 10,000 of the articles in the open access set have got annotations. And now the open access set is actually close to 500,000 now. But we're only looking at the last 10 years, so it's not fair to compare 10,000 to 500,000 in that sense. But if you look at the text mindset, we're hitting two to three times the number of articles. So the bottom line is there are many citations of data out there that are really hard to get hold of because they're not tagged by publishers. And actually, there's a couple of other articles that have tackled this issue. And these guys are actually both at the NCBI. So I'm going to name some names now, and I hope you won't mind me doing this, the people or the publishers who are being named, because you're mostly highlighted here because this is on the open access set. But I think it illustrates very clearly that there isn't, even though we might think that we are quite good at citing data in traditional databases, it's still quite mosaic in terms of the efficacy and how that's done. So if we just focus on the middle panel for the moment. When we text mine those articles for accession numbers, we found that the winning publication, perhaps not surprisingly, was PLOS One. Now, you might argue that that's because PLOS One have got 42 or 43,000 articles, and that's true. It also has the most articles, if you see on the right, but it has almost no, or maybe even zero, publisher tags. So this is also true for nucleic acids research, and emerging infectious diseases, I'm not sure who publishes that. These are just the top 10 in each category. So if you look, however, at the BMC genomics, it's got quite a lot of publisher tags, it's got quite a lot of text mined terms, and it's got quite a lot of articles. It's in all three columns. If you want some actual numbers, PLOS One, for example, we've found about just over 4,000 tags for accession numbers in these 43,000 articles. And I've asterisked this here because we've just found a slight bug in the software we use for text mining, which means it doesn't mine back matter. And that was an attempt to not mine reference lists, because they can be very messy, but we also have realized now that a lot of figures and tables are also in back matter in the actual XML document, so we've missed a lot of citations and figures and tables. So don't take this too literally, I'm just giving you an idea, but I suspect that number of tags is going to increase when we actually include those figures and tables. Okay, so why is it important to think about how we cite data? I'm sure I don't need to tell it to this audience too much, but in terms of science, if you can link article, and this came up earlier, if you cite data effectively, you can link articles based on the data that's being cited, and I'll give you an example of that in a moment. And this perhaps puts articles you might not normally find together. So if you're a scientist and you're looking at these three things, this might give you an idea that a synthesis that you haven't come across before. In terms of citation, clearly funding agencies are getting more serious about open data and data behind articles that are being published. And if they're going to ever be used as a measure of impact or compliance with a policy, then data citation needs to be clear. And of course, there's the context of the data citation we might want to look at, which when a piece of data is cited, is it because it's been submitted somewhere? Is it a new submission? Is it a reuse, or is it some analysis, or what? How is this data being reused? Operationally, clearly there might be some opportunities to provide services perhaps for publishers to improve accession number tagging. Perhaps there's room for some agreement on editorial policies and how these are enforced or how they're adhered to by authors. It's possible we could extend the LMDTD to include new types of data citation. They're not currently there. And I think there are a lot of lessons in this for when we consider unstructured data, because in many ways that's going to be even more difficult than structured data. Oh, and thank you, Open Access Publishers, because we've been able to do this study at all is because it's open access. Anybody can do this. Go to the FTP site, repeat our work. It's right there. Just to make this point, here's an accession number for a nucleotide sequence. And what I've done, I happen to know that this accession number has been cited in these articles because we've done this work. And so it's a little bit unreasonable for me to, you know, randomly type in an accession number and hope that it might be in some articles. Most articles don't contain accession numbers, and there are millions of accession numbers one could type in. But this one has been cited in three different articles in UK PubMed Central. And I thought this one was quite interesting because the oldest article at the bottom, it's a date sort. It's about the diversity of bacteria growing in natural mineral water after bottling. So you think, oh, very nice. I just had some of that last night with my lunch. Very good. And then you look at the next two. One of them is about bacteria in the shoreline affected by the Prestige oil spill. And the top one is about bacteria from contaminated, non-contaminated uranium sites. So I haven't had time, but I'd like to go and look at what this bacteria is and see why it's in not only bottled water, but in oil spill and potentially uranium-contaminated runoff from mines. If you type that accession number into Google, this is what you get. It's a very data-centric view. It's not really telling you any biology. It tells you what the organism is, though. If you type it into Google Scholar, you do get some more information about what that organism is, and more so than in UK PubMed Central. But then Google Scholar has more access to more journals. And you know, many of these references here are off-limits for text mining, so that's a shame. Finally, I'm going to talk about unstructured data. I thought I'd share with you what we have in Europe PubMed Central. So this is the percentage of articles that have some kind of supplemental data file attached to them. And you can see it's about between 25 and 30% of articles year on year. So one in three have some supplemental data. This affects almost 250,000 articles now, about 50,000 in last year. And actually we're up to about 750,000 files, 460 extensions on those files, you know, PowerPoint, Word, all kinds of weird and wonderful things that I don't know anything about. And it's approaching a terabyte of storage, which isn't very much, but actually it's about a quarter of the storage requirement for UK PubMed Central. So, you know, the good news is, however, that it's about 60 file extension types, covers most of the data. And these files are currently only referred to in articles as an HTTP URL, with some random file name after the fact. So it'd be very hard. It's hard enough, actually, it's quite hard to mine this, the context of the citation of this data, because there's nothing to key in off at all that's formal, for example, a DOI. It's also not very clear what the licensing is, actually, coming back to Ian's talk. Whether this data is covered, because some of the stuff in UK PMC is not CC BY, in fact, quite a lot of it. Some of it is under copyright. So is this associated data copyrighted or not? I sincerely hope not. But so finally, going back to this figure, we're doing okay with structured links. I think there's a lot of room for improvement, actually. And what's clear is that this data associated with articles has to be open. It has to be citable. It has to be discoverable and preferably reusable. And I don't think any of these things apply too well at the moment to unstructured data. I think there's a lot of work. But if we were to try and put these things in, these unstructured data in databases in order to analyze them and reuse them and be clear about which data is linked to which article, then there's a lot we could learn from the big data, structured data experience that we've been operating on for the last few years. And finally, the group at the EBI who help out with UK PubMed Central is about 12 strong. And we've had some help from the research group of Dietrich Ruholt-Schumann, who's now left. We collaborate with the University of Manchester and the British Library, also Open Air Plus, from the Commission's point of view, and of course, the NCBI at the National Library of Medicine in the USA. Thank you.